Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome back, episode 179 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stufko.
Everyone, we're about to bring to the table a voice. Well, Americans, you definitely recognize Susan Bennett, the voice of Siri, the original voice.
Yeah, it should be a fun interview. I guess in doing research for it, it's quite interesting, the whole story about how it actually happened. So it is an interesting industry because it's not like you Siri and you become a billionaire. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah,
we'll let Susan tell the story about how it actually happened. We won't spoil that. But, yeah, unfortunately, it's not the billionaire industry. Just because you're on Apple, you would think you are a billionaire, but unfortunately not.
Yeah, I think it's – especially – we'll get into it, but we're referencing, like, the contract side of things, the monetary side of things. You would think that it would be, oh, my voice is on so many phones throughout the world. I get a little piece of the pie. But as you're about to hear in the story – that's not always the case.
Yeah, but, you know, she comes from a pretty incredible background, musician.
Harvard, or Brown University, Ivy League grad.
Yeah, she was a voiceover artist. She's done just numerous things in the arts and media sort of
fronting
space.
A band.
So, yeah. She's
married an NHL hockey player.
She's very creative and, yeah, pretty stoked to get her on.
Good story.
All right, guys, before we get Susan on the show, just a big shout out for everyone tuning in. If you haven't yet, please tell your family and friends about the show. Please share it and subscribe for free via iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or you can catch all the episodes at www.thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Special shout out everyone recently using the hashtag on Instagram, The Vision Board Podcast. We appreciate you. Keep it up, guys. We got to get this word across.
Yeah, for sure. So keep doing that, guys. If you want to get in contact, please get in contact with us via social media or email info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. We don't bite, we actually answer back, so please get in touch.
Tristan, I don't know about that.
All right, guys, let's get straight to it, and I introduce Siri, Susan Bennett. It makes me warm now. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. Okay, guys, our special guest is Susan Bennett. Susan is a singer, musician, and voice talent. You may recognize her voice as she's the original voice of Siri. We welcome the incredible Susan Bennett. Susan, welcome to the Vision Board Podcast.
Hello, Johnny. Hello, Tristan.
Oh, my goodness. Susan, we appreciate you. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was awesome. So, yeah, a couple weeks ago, I was having a conversation at dinner, and Siri was brought up, and I had a bet with a friend that you were a real person and not an automated voice. And so, one, thank you again for stopping by the Vision Board and allowing us to pick your brain on some stuff. And two, maybe share with our fans some insights, you know, what the life of Susan Bennett is like, where you're living at, what you're doing, you know, currently.
Okay, well, I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and I've been here for many, many years, and I've basically had my entire career here. And at the moment, I'm singing in a couple of bands, and I'm doing voiceover work, which involves a lot of narrations and messaging and that sort of thing. And I'm also doing Siri speaker appearances and events. So that's kind of a new thing for me. I've been doing it for the past couple of years, and that's very fun. So I think you guys should hire me to come over to Australia and do a Siri event.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, what does a Siri event kind of involve?
Yeah, what would that entail?
Well, it would entail a keynote speech in which I would talk about how the recordings were done, what it's like to be a voice actor. I do several different voices. The reason I am Real Voice of Siri is a result of being a voice actor. And then I talk about also what a crazy, wacky thing it was and how it took me a bit of time to accept or to embrace Siri, shall we say.
Yeah, was the story, is it a true story of like the serendipitous event that you were just in the right place at the right time in terms of getting casted for The Voice? Was there somebody else in line in front of you?
I have no idea, because the casting was done really with no one's knowledge. I had been doing some work for a company in Atlanta, and they were associated with a bigger IVR company called Nuance. And so we did a lot of recordings for them. This started off in 2005. And at the time, it was before technology had really grabbed hold. I mean, you know, Siri wasn't an entity at that time. There was nothing like that at that time. So we really didn't know exactly what we were doing. I've talked to other original Siri voices who had the same experience. And the reason there is more than one Siri voice is because, of course, they needed native speakers to be the Siri voice in whatever country, whatever language of the country that the phone was going into. So we've all had the same experience in that we did these recordings and just thought they were for phone systems, and they turned out to be for a lot more than that. So they became Siri.
Yeah. When originally did you actually find out that you actually were Siri?
Well, Siri appeared on October 4th, 2011. Yes, she's a Libra. And that's the day I found out. A fellow voice actor emailed me and said, "Hey, we're playing around with this new iPhone app. Isn't this you?" And I went, "What?" And went on the Apple site and listened and said, "Oh, wow." Yeah.
So when you were going through the process and going on the auditions and lending your voice to these recordings, there was never an understanding of what it was going to be for, and they never said that, "Hey, Susan, you got this." So if those were both answered, in anonymity, did you get paid for it?
Well, we all do auditions all the time. That's the way work is usually gotten. But in this case, I was auditioning without even realizing it. A lot of the voices that were reading specifically for Nuance ended up being available to other companies. And we did not realize that that's what we were doing. We thought we were just providing voices for phone systems. So, yes, we were paid for the original recordings, and no, we were not paid for being on millions of Apple devices.
Yeah, so...
So, it was a pretty weird thing. It was kind of a tough thing to deal with for a while there. But of course, you know, corporations have been doing that to the little guy for a very long time. So it was nothing new. I'll have to say that it's turned into a really, really fun and very rewarding experience. I've had a chance to do all kinds of stuff that I never would have had to do just being Susan Bennett. So being the original voice of Siri has been a very, very positive thing. So I don't want to throw water on the deal. But I can honestly say that we did not really know where these voices were going to end up, where our recordings were going to end up. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we weren't privy to, most of us are artistic people. We, you know, voiceover actors usually come from, you know, the arts. They're either musicians or they've been in radio, some kind of performance theater. And so consequently, you know, when we do a job, we just love having a job and we do the best we can. And then this was something new that technology brought to the table, that, you know, we as thinking human beings were not on board with how quickly technology was just going to run with all this stuff. So, you know, I guess we were pretty naive, but, that's the life of a freelancer. You know, someone presents you with, you know, hours and hours and hours of fairly lucrative work, and you go, "Oh yeah, I'm in." And then boom, the voices were all over the world. So it was it's a very unique and very interesting experience.
Yeah. Susan, how long did it take after you initially the Siri app got released and, you know, your voice started becoming heard, over and over and over in the United States, how long did the other kind of leveraging sort of gigs that came from that take? Was it right away that you started getting notoriety, or was it like a year or so after? Share a little bit about that process, and was it frustrating or not?
Well, you'll find it hard to believe, but it took me 2 whole years to decide to reveal myself as the voice of Siri. And, you know, having absolutely amazing timing that I do, of course, when I revealed myself is when they were starting to change the voices. What happened was we believe that the original voices were replaced, and that happened starting with the iPhone, oh, I think 5S. And Apple really likes to keep everything pretty close to the vest. They didn't really want all of us, you know, voice actors, Siri actors, telling people who we were, because they wanted the app to remain anonymous. They wanted everybody to be able to envision their own version of Siri every time they were talking to the app. And so they replaced our original voices with voices that sounded very much like us. And then, of course, they've changed the voice again with the new iPhone 8 and iPhone X. And the voice has gotten much, much younger and very, very different sounding from the typical what we have, you know, come to think of as the Siri voice.
Susan, did anyone else claim that that was Siri?
Did anyone claim that it was me?
No. When you were actually, because obviously your voice, you can prove it's you. It's you. But did you, when you were doing it, you know, obviously your popularity probably increased and things like that. Were there like haters and things like that that came out and like tried to claim it was them instead of you or anything like that?
Oh, I think there were a couple people that did that. But the irony is that it's not wasn't necessarily advantageous as a voice actor to reveal myself as the voice of Siri, because when you're doing the sort of anonymous recording that you do for phone messaging and that sort of thing, when people hear your voice, unless it's a very recognizable voice, unless it's Morgan Freeman or, you know, someone like that, or unless it's a very quirky voice, and you say, oh my God, what a strange thing to be on the phone. But if it's a regular voice, people don't pay attention to the voice. They're paying attention to the information that that voice is disseminating. So you can pretty much remain anonymous. But when that anonymous voice suddenly becomes a persona, like Siri or Alexa or Cortana or any of these characters, when people are speaking to that voice and becoming familiar with that voice, you know, many, many times a day, I have no way of assessing how much work that I have lost, because, you know, people can't see beyond the fact that I am the original voice of Siri. You know, people really love to stereotype people. I mean, you see some of these poor actors that, you know, get, oh, she always plays the mom, or oh no, that's the killer. That guy always plays the killer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing with the voice of Siri. It's like, well, she's Siri. And, you know, it's kind of a tough battle, because even though there are many examples of other voices besides Siri on my website, you don't have a tendency to judge you like that.
And, you know, I know you have a, you know, your education's from Brown. You are, you know, in the performing arts. I want to use an analogy. So I'm really into, you know, stand-up. And one of the guys back in the day, Andrew Dice Clay, he became famous for a specific bit in his hour-long stand-up. I think he used to go by Andrew Greenberg or something along those lines. And then he became the character Dice, which was just one bit of like his hour long presentation. You, since you were young, being in the performing arts, was Siri something that was manifesting all along? And then, you know, the timing was just right when you ended up getting the gig, or was it something that you created on the spot?
Well, it's nothing that I particularly created, because I had no knowledge of it. I think that my voice was chosen because I had heard, I've read, and of course, you know, everything you read on the internet is the truth, of course. I had read that they were looking for a voice that was otherworldly and with a wry sense of humor. And so I think that, in a way, that kind of does describe me. But for me, what they needed was a voice that was maybe just a little, an interesting voice, but yet professional, in the sense that they needed someone that was articulate, you know, so that when Siri was speaking, that people could understand what she said. And, but as I said, it wasn't really an audition process per se, because, you know, I didn't get an email from my agent saying, oh, they want you to audition for this such and such and such and such. It was, for me, it was a complete and utter surprise and sort of accident. I didn't realize that, I guess possibly I was auditioning all along and just didn't know it. So
Susan, did you find it difficult at all to transition onto the stage for your keynotes?
Not really, because I used to do a lot of theater, and I fronted a band for 25 years, actually. We had a private event band. We did a lot of conferences and corporate stuff and weddings and that kind of stuff. And so I'm not uncomfortable on stage. And actually, being on stage as the voice of Siri, people are already on my side. It's not like I have to win them over, like with stand-up. I think that's not good for you. That's the most terrifying thing I can imagine, is getting up and trying to make people laugh. But Siri, the crowd already is on board with me. And so it was a very easy transition, actually. Probably the hardest thing for me was just actually writing a 45-minute presentation that was going to be, interesting and hopefully entertaining for people.
One of my favorite phrases right now is, it's the thought process of, if you become obsessed with a passion, you'll begin to see it appear everywhere else in your life. With you, from 2011 on, were you into technology? Was this something that you were interested in? And since then, are you like up to date on the new AIs, DCAs, sort of like innovative technology such as that?
Well, I'll have to tell you, it's one of life's little ironies that I am just the most untechie person in the world. And I'm very, very good at the technology that I know. When I do most of my work in my studio, I often do just the recordings on my own and upload the files and, send them off to people. And I'm very, very good at that. I'm good at editing my own stuff. But I am not intuitive at all with technology. In fact, I did an interview for a tech magazine 2 or 3 years ago, and they wrote me and said, well, we're asking all of our interviewees to send us their favorite tech tip. 40 words or less, your favorite tech tip. And I just started laughing. I wrote back and said, well, you asking me for a tech tip is kind of like you asking a vegan for a pork barbecue recipe. And then I said, oh, wait, I do have a tip. Try not to hit the wrong button. Yeah, and they reacted just as you are. We did not think it was funny. No sense of humor on those boys at all. And never heard back from them again. Sadly, I don't think they realized the truth of the statement. I mean, really, I have no tech tip. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
My best tech tip, call your techie friend.
Susan, is there any like specific food that you eat for like a clear voice? Because sometimes I get, especially in the mornings, sometimes the voice gets a little bit croaky and things like that. Do you guys eat specific foods to make your voice sound good?
Well, that's a very good question. I started to have a lot of trouble with my voice in 2011, actually before the big Siri revelation. And it turned out that I had these sort of low-grade intolerances, food intolerances, that I wasn't aware of. And, if you look up anywhere on the web or any place about how to take care of your voice, there are some things that are just general information. Of course, don't smoke, don't be around smoke, don't drink, protect your voice by don't talk too much. Don't try to yell over, in crowds and everything. Don't drink cold water or hot water, just tepid water to protect your vocal cords, and no dairy, all kinds of things. And then, of course, lumped into all this, I was told I couldn't have any wheat. I couldn't drink wine. So see, you don't realize the sacrifices I have made for my career.
Big time. So what do you eat?
Surprisingly enough, my husband and I both do a very high protein, low carb thing. So we do eat a lot of lean meats and vegetables, and which isn't to say that every once in a while we don't have the odd pizza, because life is too short not to eat pizza. So we try to keep it. There's only so much you can do, really. I remember when Celine Dion was at the height of her popularity, and she just. She said that she just didn't talk. She only sang. Wow. She'd write notes to people, and she wouldn't talk, because you know, all of that does, you know, does wear and tear on the vocal cords. So I think it's an individual, a thing for individual people as well, though, too. There are some people that are more sensitive to things that will affect, you know, their sinuses and their throats and everything. So you kind of have to know your own body and figure out what's best for you.
Let's talk about creativity for a little bit, because, you know, with the voiceover work, you know, you've done work with shows, movies, cartoons, technology. Are the ideas coming to you from the producers and from the auditions? Do you have any techniques or tips for us? You know, Tris and I are both, you know, we're presenters, we're hosts, we're coaches, we write. So creativity is always being brought up. Is there anything that you've maybe picked up since you know, back in the day that you keep with that helps you kind of open that thought process up to be more creative?
Well, it's a constant battle for me because I consider myself very, very fortunate that I've done as well as I've done considering my personality and considering the way I was raised. I was discouraged from every step of the way from doing anything, you know, creative or performance-wise. My folks were very, very, I mean, they were wonderful people, but they were, you know, very, very, very cautious and conservative. And so, you know, I kind of have to battle that. And I very much have to battle the thing of, oh, gee, I don't know if I'm good enough to do that. You know, it's a constant thing. I have to talk to myself a lot, but I think that sometimes the best thing you can possibly do is do what you're afraid of, you know, just a little bit, just do something. And that was the big Siri life lesson for me. I just vacillated back and forth for 2 whole years. You know, I would find reasons to reveal myself as Siri. I'd find reasons not to reveal myself as Siri. And I really was just stuck and couldn't make that decision until finally, just one day, I reached a point and I just, oh, Susan, for heaven's sakes, what have you got to lose? And so I threw myself out there. And it just seems that once you hop over that obstacle, once you just work through that obstacle, all kinds of things start flowing again and going your way. And I guess probably the key is try to have a very great sense of humor and try not to worry about looking like an idiot.
was that your fear of not wanting to tell the world that you were Siri? Was that what was holding you back?
You know, I think part of it was the fact that this happened to me at such a late stage in my life. I think that it was that whole thing about the way I was going to be perceived by people. And, you know, as I said, I grew up, you know, decades ago, and there was just a very different aura in the culture, just a very different atmosphere that people were in, and we were just more restricted with ourselves and a lot more cautious about things. And as I said before, my parents were very, very reserved and cautious people. And so that's why I think it was much more of a big deal than I made it much more of a big deal than it really ended up being. So
yes.
A word to the wise, just don't be afraid to jump in there.
Yeah. Joseph Campbell, if you're falling, dive. It's one of my favorites.
Yes. Susan, like once you did actually reveal that you were Siri, you know, obviously you would have got a fair bit of fame out of it. You know, you just spoke about coming from a conservative family. Once you did become a little bit famous out of it, how did you handle that?
Well, I was very, very fortunate because I didn't really become famous myself. I'm not the kind of person that's going to, like, you know, a true celebrity. If I walk down the street, nobody is going to know who I am. Yeah. There have been, you know, the one woman at Von Maur department store recognized me, and and only 2 people in the entire time that I've, you know, been anywhere near an Apple device, only 2 people recognized my voice. And I, one was a banker, one was a waiter, and I said, oh, you guys are in the wrong business. You need to get into audio because you've got really good ears. Fame has really not been a problem for me. And I'm a very private, rather introverted person. And so I think part of that is because I've protected myself from too much of it, you know.
What about people?
Yeah, it's kind of.
What about people wanting more of your time? Like, have you found it hard to adjust to, you know, your schedule being a lot more packed than it was, let's say, 20 years ago?
Oh, no. Actually, 20 years ago, my schedule was much more packed than it is now.
Okay.
Yeah. It's worked out really, really well. Most people, you know, the people that I know who are my friends and know that I'm Siri, they really don't bother me about it. I mean, no one encroaches on my on my privacy. You know, people send me emails and I'll write back, and they ask for pictures and I'll send one, and you know, that kind of thing. But it's a very minimal thing. You know, it's very minimal. It's not. You know, I never aspired to fame. That wasn't anything that I was particularly interested in. I was just interested in using whatever talents I have.
With the global voices, are they all women? Apple used, or are there some guys?
No, the French Siri was male. The English Siri was male.
Okay.
I think it just depends on what people are used to hearing in whatever country the phone is going into. They choose whether it's male or female. Now, of course, you can choose just about, you know, anyone.
Yeah, that's interesting because right, you know, down in Australia, the politics, gender equality is a big one with, you know, pay rates. And a good friend of mine, she is in a male-driven industry and she's, you know, dominant in it. And we're always talking about, you know, social constructs about, you know, what the roles or society says males should do or women should do. And you come from, you know, your path and your journey, you've seen like not only society keep changing, but obviously technology. What's your opinion on that? Do you use your fame and your path to empower women at all? Is that something that speaks to you?
Well, something that I would like to do. I haven't really done anything specifically, you know, except just to talk to different students and things like that. I Skype with different schools and try to talk to people about that. It's such a strange thing because the male-female thing has become so complicated. And, you know, back in the day before women were really working, I can't think of the word I'm looking for. The roles of each, you know, gender mm-hmm. were very specific. The guy went out and hunted and, you know, did the work and brought the stuff back. The woman stayed home and made the nest, you know. And so biologically speaking, it's you know, I think that there's somehow ingrained in our DNA somewhere that particular relationship. But with the development of, you know, society and industrialization and now with technology and everything, it's, you know, it's really necessary that, you know, men and women are not going to be equal in the sense that they are the same. They're just not the same, but they should be paid the same and they should be given equal opportunities to do the same thing. I mean, if you've got a male and a female vying for a job and the female's smarter and she's quicker at her job, she should get it, you know? So I think gradually we're starting to see that change. And, it's a complicated thing, and it's not an easy thing to deal with. But, oh, yeah, absolutely. Women should get paid equally, of course. Yeah. Anybody doing any job that's exactly the same. Now, then again, if you have a person that's really, really putting in, like, 1,000%, maybe they should get a little bit more. You know, just judge it on capability and performance rather than...
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Susan, can we get a little bit of advice? Like, back in the day when you were auditioning and things like that, I'm sure that you probably got rejected from time to time. How would you, you know, giving us advice, how did you deal with rejection and then get back on the horse, so to say?
Well, rejection, if you're going to be in the arts, anywhere in the arts, performing arts, Rejection is part of your job. And so that's the way I looked at it. And my agents loved me because I did that. I would go in for an audition and, you know, and if I didn't hear back, I just let it go. I said, well, okay, well, this is what I'm doing for my job today. I'm going to audition for this thing. And then, you know, they would say to me, well, you're not like any of our other, you know, clients. So you don't pester us. Well, who got this? Why didn't I get it? And I said, well, I said, my feeling is that this is part of my job. And if I got it, I'm pretty sure you would contact me. So I just let it go. That's something that you just have to, you kind of have to harden yourself against, you know, and the thing is that, you know, just keep on doing it and eventually you'll get something. But auditioning is just, you have got to accept, you know, the rejection thing because it's going to happen and it's going to happen more than once. So that's just something you have to accept as part of the job.
Maybe you reject me here, but I need to ask you this because not every day we get to sit down with somebody with, you know, having the voice that you have. And you kind of gave us a little sample early on in the interview. But Susan, with putting you on the spot using just Johnny and Tristan and the name of our show, the Vision Board Podcast, what soundbite would you come up with in the voice of Siri?
I'm so sorry, boys. I don't do that without a lot of money.
Fair enough. Thank you.
It's good to see that you could turn it on and off.
Oh yeah, Siri's got a good sense of humor. I've decided that's the key to life. Sense of humor.
Very important.
Susan, out of like everything that you do, from being a musician to voiceover to everything, being on stage, what's your true love?
Oh, that is a really tough question. I would have to say, oh boy, I don't know. I would say equally, voiceover and singing are probably equally.
How does it make you feel though? Is it something that kind of like ignites inside of you? Do you feel like just really good about yourself?
Oh yeah. I get the feeling that, okay, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Good. Do more of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really fun. For the most part. And, you know, I've been fortunate with the people that I've had a chance to work with, both as employers and as, you know, fellow voice actors. I've been able to work with a wonderful group of people, so that's always a big plus as well.
Do you have your music online?
I mostly still listen to my iPod, stuff that I put on the iPod. And
do you have any original music though?
I'm sorry?
Like that the listeners are, you know, the people listening to this, do you have any music online, like your original music? Because you're the lead singer of a band and everything.
Yeah, I'll have to say that I am not a writer as far, you know, I'm more of a, you know, a person that performs a task. I'm very task oriented. And I'm most creative when I get to collaborate with other people. I'm not so that much of a self-starter. I can self-start when I'm, you know, doing something at home, like making a card for someone. I can draw and paint a little bit. And but as far as I really do much better if I'm given a task and then I can collaborate with other people. But my husband is a fabulous guitar player, and he has written a whole blues album. You know, I'm not even sure if that's online, but his name is Rick Hinkle, H-I-N-K-L-E, and I look him up on the web, and he's done a lot of recording for a lot of different people. So, plus he's very much a blues player. He loves blues.
Susan, when you I saw that you did the Lego Batman movie. When you do a voiceover for that, how long does the process take?
Okay, that was one of those things where I did not do that. That was, I don't know how that got out there. I was on one of the trailers for that movie. Yeah, and that's another one of those things where someone just bought my voice from Nuance and put it on the trailer. Although I have to say that, you know, that karma, you know, things come around, and I have a fabulous agent in Los Angeles, Wes Stevens at Fox. And this fabulous man has actually gotten me paid for being on some commercials. So, this is a very good thing.
Yeah, there's this new. Have you ever heard of the podcast Radio Lab?
I have heard of it, but I haven't listened to it.
They had Radiolab had this one little 30-minute podcast about this new technology to where now we can mimic, like, people can mimic fame, like, any voice, and they can also like create sentences and interviews and use the words.
So it's kind of like
what you said, how that Lego movie, they just kind of, so is this one of those things they took your voice, or the company that used it for the Apple sold it to them without even you getting any royalties? Was it that the case?
I did not get paid, if that's what you're asking. And all I can think of is that they got the voice from Nuance. I don't know.
That's like,
you know, all done behind the scenes. But, you know, the that's what I worry about as we get closer to AI. You know, it really, I wonder what it, how the effect it's going to have in the arts. If you've got people just, you know, able to use their computer and come up with the voices rather than using a real human. I just really wonder about the future of the human race. I kind of agree with Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, who believe that if we do come to complete AI, that's really going to be the end of us humans. Because if you end up having machines that can do the same job as a human, but do it better, faster, they're smarter, and they don't require food or water, then, oh boy.
Yeah.
Where does that leave us?
What's even another scarier proposition is this company that's been around for a few years called CRISPR. Have you heard of that?
Uh-uh.
So CRISPR is a human gene modifier. So the positive side, if you were to have, like, you know, in the, you know, with the baby, you know, in the before a baby is born in the womb, to see, like, the sort of, maybe they're predisposed to, you know, Alzheimer's. So they could go in and remove that gene. And, or like, maybe you're predisposed to Down syndrome. You could go in before the baby is born and remove that. But the consequences, like, the people who are kind of hating on CRISPR are like, well, the human race is going to evolve into, like, everyone's going to be superhuman. Like, everyone's going to have these perfect sort of, like, gene modalities to where there would be no flaws. And then kind of, like, Musk talks about that would be also comparable to, like, what's happening with the AI, the intelligence. You have the machines, and then that'll be the fusion of man into machine, which is crazy. But, yeah. Are you familiar with any of that?
Well, I really don't know what to say about all that. I find it extremely creepy. I found it extremely creepy to talk to the iPhone and hear my voice talk back to me. So, you know, I don't know. We're going to have a lot of really interesting moral decisions to make as the machines keep doing more and more. It's really going to be. I have no idea. Of course, it would be better for us to figure out ways to not have diseases. But I don't know. Going into the fetus, and I don't know.
It's pretty heavy.
I'm just gonna take the fifth on that one, I think.
All right, Susan. We've answered the personality part of the interview. Have you got any more before we do that?
Let's do it.
Okay. First question.
Susan Bennett, just for our listeners at home, when you're having bad days, what sort of advice would you give to them?
Let's see. Jump up and down and scream really loud. And then just realize that 24 hours can make a huge difference. You know, just try to let it go and wait for another day.
That's great. Yeah. Hey, Susan, I didn't even get to ask you, where did you actually grow up? What city?
I was born in Burlington, Vermont. And I moved there my parents moved from there when I was very, very young. I lived outside of Boston for several years. Then I lived outside of Providence, Rhode Island for a few years. And then I went from grade 6 through 12 in a little tiny town called Clinton, New York. And so that's where I grew up. And I've been in Atlanta, Georgia for decades now. So,
wow. What brought you to Atlanta?
Well, I met my first husband, Ed Brown, and he was a hockey player, Kurt Bennett. He was the first American hockey player to score over 30 goals in the NHL.
Okay.
And so the Atlanta Flames was a brand new team that had been created in, oh gosh, I guess that was 72. And so we came down to Atlanta then, and we both fell in love with the city. So I just stayed.
Yeah. I usually ask guests, what posters do they have on their bedroom wall when they grew up? What posters did you have any when you were growing up?
Yes, I did. Ringo. I had a poster of Ringo.
Ringo.
Beatle, he's your guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Ringo from the Beatles.
Of course. Yeah, Susan, if three of your best friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
I really hate to say. Hopefully they'd say something funny. Okay, second time taking the fifth.
It's all good. We're not lawyers.
All right.
Good day.
Right? Susan, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, only rules, no family or friends, but you can invite anyone dead or alive. Who would you like to invite?
Oh, okay. I would like to invite Mick Jagger.
Yes.
I would like to invite Paul McCartney. Oh, God. There are so many. Let's see. I know it would be difficult, but Mariah Carey. I guess Barbara Streisand and Audrey Hepburn.
All singers and actors. Awesome. They're
mad, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Before we let you go, Susan, everyone get following Susan online. You can find her at susancbennett.com. Twitter, she is Seriously Susan, and that is her Facebook handle as well.
Yes, S-I-R-I.
Yes. I'll have it all in the show notes for everyone to check it out and follow you.
Susan, thanks a lot for doing this with us. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. You have a great day, and we'll hopefully catch up soon.
So long, boys.
Johnny, that was Susan Bennett, man.
Susan Bennett, a lifetime of stories. Pretty fascinating, too, her breaking down the whole process of how she got the gig. And, you know, it's not always what you've seen. Like you said before we brought her on, you would think that she'd be a billionaire.
Yeah, but I guess it's a story of kind of perseverance. You never know when the big break's going to happen. And
that's what I took from that.
I guess it's kind of exciting in different stages of your life that just because sometimes you get pigeonholed in 20s and 30s being the peak of our lives, you know, some good things can happen when you least expect it. So I guess that's what I got out of it, that just depending on what you do, it's like just keep soldiering on. You just never know when the next big thing might happen.
Do you think that we're changing as a society of, well, it's changing with the younger people, the way they think? Because I know when you and I were younger and kids, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but I used to think a certain way about 30-year-olds. I'm talking when I was 9, 10, 11, 12, or even 18. I used to think a certain way about what 50-year-olds do or what 60-year-olds do.
Yeah, of course. I think there's just that stigma within society about different ages and where it can happen.
But do you think that that's changing, or do you think if you still talk to those 12-year-olds, they still think, oh, you're 30, you're old, that sort of thing?
Not really. I think as we evolve as people, like I think I read something the other day, I think most people in their lifetimes will have like 4 or 5 different jobs. So I think it's just getting to that stage and then you'll see.
You mean 4 or 5 different careers?
Yeah, 4 or 5 different careers.
Yeah, not jobs.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah, so jobs. Careers, I've had like 30 jobs.
Yeah, sorry. Careers through their lifetime.
Through their lifetime.
Yeah, so at the start, that's you probably think that as soon as you get out of university or you finish school at 18 or whatever, that the next job that you're going to do for 30 years or something.
That's how we were raised though, man. Right?
Yeah, like, but it's like I think it's changing now that
good.
It is more.
That's a lot of pressure for an 18-year-old, man. Like in like having, all right, you're done with high school. You got to go to college. Now you have to pick what you want to do for the rest of your life as a teenager, and you're going to do that forever.
Yeah.
So, like guys like myself, I heard that and I was like, man, how do I get a plane ticket? Let me get the hell out of here and just run. Because that's a lot of pressure. I like that idea. 4 to 5 careers. That's awesome. Because I come from a town where like you graduate high school, you get married, you work at the steel mill. it's really exciting.
I guess like one of those things is just ingrained in the culture, and it is a security mechanism as well. Do you know what I mean? There's no need for them to branch out and take a risk. So it's an easy, steady paycheck, and it doesn't make them think outside their comfort zone. So it's probably one of those things that just it's just being ingrained in the culture there, I guess.
And that's the oldest friend you have.
like not years quantified, you knowing them, but age-wise that you could call, hey, that's a friend of mine?
As an actual friend, probably Ro. Ro's probably 10 years older than me, 45.
So we'll say 45. How many career? Well, you don't have to put. He's been on the show before.
Yeah, he's had 4 or 5 careers already.
Okay.
He's a serial entrepreneur, so
he actually preaches that. He went from what, a gym owner,
to a
host, a presenter, a writer.
Yeah, he's done a lot of businesses. He does his wellness business, and obviously he's a keynote speaker. So he's got a lot of different. You learn different skills doing different industries, and it's a way for you to branch out, push yourself, and learn new skills.
And you were a ref before.
Back in my younger days,
would I think you call that a career? Referees,
no? Not at that stage, man. Okay. Like it taught me a lot of skills, and obviously there's a lot of discipline with training and analyzing games and things like that. So it does teach you other skills that are useful in your next sort of careers and things like that. So
what did you do right out of college? What was that first gig right out of college?
That was straight in the stockbroking office. So just worked as, they called it at the time, office junior. So you work, you do all the mail, you go around to all the different companies that you have to deliver stuff to. You do all the shit kicker jobs until they say that you're ready. So usually it takes about 3 months. It's a good way to see if someone's committed to whether they want to be part of a process, part of a team.
Yeah.
It's a hard job. You don't get paid much money. And you just have to get through it to get to your next sort of level. So
in that industry, do you see quite often that that's a lifelong industry that people just stay in?
No, technology's killed stockbroking industry now.
Okay.
It's absolutely killed it. Because
when you first got in and then you went, you know, you were coaching.
When I was first there, so you know how you can do everything online now. So you can trade yourself online and it's so cheap and things like that. When I first started 13 years ago, none of that existed. So the companies had a stranglehold. They could charge anything they wanted for someone to do a transaction.
Wow.
So in terms of like transaction fees, it's like literally, it's not what it was. And that's why it's changing landscape. That's why you only see a lot of the big banks and a lot of the major corporations have huge, huge businesses. And then obviously the smaller business now are kind of in the struggle zone because it's just not as profitable at all.
Yeah, interesting. So do you see that? So where that was out of college, you know, your career as a coach, doing what you're doing now at 35, going into your 36th year of life, do you like, because we just talked to Susan, who's in her, I think, late 60s. Are you excited about like the whole? Because
it scares me a little bit. I think technology is running through, and I think people don't realize that. Like
running through it, like all industries, or do you think that you won't need your, because they're talking about like a lot of machines are going to be replacing a lot of like mundane jobs, but stocks doesn't sound mundane. You would think you would need that sort of consciousness to kind of sell.
Because of the amount of information people can gather, there is actually robo advice now, so people can give you advice off
robot.
So you will have to, the only thing the client will have to do is just provide information. But the way information is being gathered now, like Google already know what I want to look at before I even,
because of patterns
it. Like I open Google now and it'll bring up a UFC story, a rugby league story, a boxing story, a rugby union story, because of things that I've searched. It's just like,
and then the Victoria's Secret fashion show, right?
Yeah, at the bottom.
Yeah, done. Yeah.
And it's just like, it knows me better than I know myself.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
That's awesome, man. Well, there you go. I'd be excited. I mean, like, my career started, you know, I went from thinking that sport was a career and then denial that, you know, working in the nightclub industry and then sales and then coaching. It's just, I think that's where we need to go as humans, though, to not have this fixated mindset on this one thing is going to defy me until I die. I think that's dangerous.
One thing I did find out this week, because I told you about our email system being down.
Yeah.
So our work email we didn't have for 4 days, but it meant that I actually had to pick up the phone and actually interact with the person that I would never talk to. I'd just email. And that happened a lot across the week. And I found it actually a little bit better because I was actually talking to people instead of talking to the machine. So I think that's probably a warning that even now in today's day and age with technology becoming so big, I spoke about the stockbroking industry shrinking because of technology. I can see the same thing happening in the fitness industry, and I can already see it happening with the amount of online stuff that's happening as well. And it's going to probably happen across the board. You see Amazon coming into Australia and all around the world and things like that. They're even entering the movie space and the all sorts of online space, which 5 years ago you would never think that would be a TV network. So all of a sudden they're putting pressure on space. So it's all from technology, man.
Hopefully, and what I've been really focusing on is trying to figure out how to create that human experience again. So like, without sounding too like big old dreams and aspirations of taking over the world. But I think that's a huge white space for people out there listening or startup companies to figure out that, all right, yeah, we are transitioning into this technology age, but also it is important for us to keep this human connection, that human-to-human experience. So I think that there's going to be companies started or maybe some ideas created about simplifying and reverting back to what we once used to do in terms of relationships.
I hope so.
Me too, because that's what makes us human.
Yeah.
The relationships that we have. Chaz, me sitting here and seeing you and being able to touch you is important. You know, we talked to Susan through a machine, but I don't think it would have the same effect if I had to talk through every episode with you through a machine and the guests. I don't think it would be that much rewarding.
No, I don't think so.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Technology is an interesting space. It's absolutely killing it. All right, guys, thanks again for tuning in the show. Please tell your family and friends about the show if you loved it. And subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. You'll find all the episodes online at www.thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Yeah, buddy, we appreciate you guys.
All right, guys, before we go, Johnny, your social media stuff.
Follow me all across the board, Johnny Stofko.
There you go. He's even emphasizing Stofko now.
I was going to think about just dropping Johnny and just going by just Stofko.
Really?
A friend of mine told me to do it. They're like, dude, why don't you just drop your first name and just go by one name? I was like, oh, I don't know. That's douchey.
You're not Drake, man.
Yeah. Well, Drake's a duck, so no one wants to be named after a duck, and he's not really talented. Terrible. I don't think Drake's talented at all. Are you a Drake guy?
Are you hating?
Are you a Drake guy?
I'm not a Drake guy, but okay, he's ultra talented.
No, he was on the Disney Channel. Come on now. He's a fake rapper.
Just to get on the Disney Channel.
He's a fake rapper. Hopefully I'm losing people right now.
Oh my God, Johnny. I have to cut this out. All right, guys. You can find me on Tristan Cannell across all my social media. Please get in touch. info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. If you've got any suggestions or guest requests, please send them through and we'll try our best to get them on the show. Johnny, till next week. I think Drake's next. 180.
I would interview him, but I don't know. Yeah, it's all good. Guys, we appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys, we'll check you next week.
Peace.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.